Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Three Women, Three Ways. There are three of us here, and we each have different perspectives, and we want to talk to you about current events and things that are happening in the world from our perspective. With me is Deborah. Deborah, you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, world. This is Deborah Adams. I'm one of the three women, and I'm going to give you my way. Tell it like it is.
Okay, and we also have Pinkley.
Yeah, hi, everyone. This is Pinkley, Connie Sue, and it's just wonderful to be here this morning or this afternoon.
Yeah, and I'm Heather Stark, and I'm here to help coordinate and throw in my three cents as well. So, but earlier today, Deborah, we were talking about the meaning of words and what some of those words actually mean and what they convey. And one of the words that we got kind of stuck on was forgiveness. And you mentioned somebody that you had forgiven.
Right.
And I said that I don't believe in forgiveness. I don't believe it's mine to give. And in my view, if you forgive somebody, you're giving them a pass, which doesn't mean that you have to fester and continue to think about the problem. But that's how I see it, that if you give forgiveness, you've given them a pass. And you had a different view.
I did. I did have a different view on that, and that's only after a long thought process and study and actually learning from some other people at different workshops about what forgiveness is. And because of my experience, the ex in my relationship was abusive, and I've been away for 20 years. But people still will say, I thought you'd be over it by now. Can't you just forgive and forget? And I'm like,
Let's see, you had a catastrophic accident that changed your entire life. Can you just let that go, Deborah?
Yeah, certainly you would think so after 20 years.
Yeah.
But obviously not true for me. So my most recent experience was listening to Dr. Reverend Marie Fortune of the Faith Trust Institute in Seattle, Washington. And she was doing a workshop on forgiveness. And I raised my hand and I said, so I'm having trouble with this forgiveness thing. I don't feel a need for revenge. The ex does not consume my life. I don't want to engage in any way with him. I don't even think about him much anymore. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, in a way, then you've forgiven. Mm-hmm. You've let go.
Yeah.
And that is one way that you can forgive people, is letting go.
So she was equating forgiveness with letting go.
Yes.
And I believe in the letting go part, but to me the forgiveness means something different. It means a path. What about you, Pinkley? How does it?
Forgiveness has been challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I think that where I have come from is a place of forgiving that you have to let it go on some level. So I do think that it's part of letting go, but it doesn't still mean that there's not some accountability piece to it.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, in my experience with domestic violence, is that I had to find it someplace in my heart to forgive this other person, because I think this other person was not at peace with themselves.
Yeah. But there again, you're doing the same as Deborah, which is saying forgiveness means letting go. And in my view, I can let go, but to me, forgiveness means you are absolved of your sins. You no longer have responsibility for the nasty crap you did.
Right.
And we even did the dictionary thing, didn't we?
Yes,
Deborah?
We did.
Yeah.
We had to look it up, and of course, some of our life experience, the three of us have college education later in life, and so we kind of like looking things up, and then adding our own perspective to it, I believe, don't you?
Yeah, I think so too. Actually, I think this would be a good time to just kind of interrupt and tell us your background, Deborah. What have you done professionally?
Okay. For almost 20 years, I've been involved in a nonprofit agency working with domestic violence survivors, and it has been quite a journey for me. I was mentioning earlier that it feels like full circle for me because I started as a volunteer in the shelter, and I ended up as the director of the program. And during that time, they supported me in my educational pursuits.
And you went back to school?
I went back to school, and I earned a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And since then, I have been building relationships on a statewide, national-wide, and international connections on the topic of violence against women, and including domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, stalking, you name it.
So you have a really diverse background in this area.
Yeah, I do.
How about you, Heather?
Oh, you're going to get to me?
Yeah,
I want to do you first.
Okay. Well, certainly this is not ever anything that I had planned on any sort of career checklist. When I was in school, high school, I never even dreamt of going to college, never dreamt of being in a domestic violence situation. My idea and dream was the house and the white picket fence. So after leaving my situation, I started volunteering at our local domestic violence sexual assault program. It was about 14 years ago. Since then, I've gotten an AA degree and a BA at the Evergreen State College here in Olympia, Washington, emphasizing in social justice, and have been involved in this work now for the last 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so you both had backgrounds in domestic violence and then continued to work in the area of domestic violence.
Yes.
My background's a little different. I actually have a journalism degree, and I work in radio, and I also went back to college as an adult, and it turns out that I got a master's in public administration with a focus on domestic violence. It's an area that's been significant to me in my lifetime. And then I went on, and so right now I'm two classes away from starting my dissertation for my PhD.
Yeah.
If I live that long.
You will, girl.
In organizational psychology. And what I'd like to do is I also helped found a nonprofit organization to help survivors of domestic violence. So I'm hopeful that I can use this PhD to do research in the area of women and the long-term effects of domestic violence. So you guys are clearly examples of how you can be successful after such an experience. But there are plenty of women who have a hard time finding that level of success.
Right.
And it turns out there's a lot of residual stuff that stays with a person, that is an experience that stays with you and changes you. It changes everything from your brain waves to, you know, your physical and emotional outlooks on life and everything. So big stuff.
Stuff.
So I think it's because of we all have that interest in domestic violence that we decided to kind of come together. And certainly we're not going to talk nonstop about domestic violence, but it just so happens that the idea of forgiveness fits in well with that topic.
And not only with that topic, but all aspects of our life, right?
Sure. We're always being told to forgive. You've got to forgive.
On an interpersonal level, but work relationships, often you have to forgive and forget, right? That's the famous saying, forgive and forget.
Can you forgive without forgetting?
I don't think so, and actually,
so
you don't think so either.
Absolutely not. Well, never forget.
Dr. Reverend Marie said that. She goes, it is not a biblical term, forgive and forget. So it's a Christian-based argument for, you know, forgiving and moving on is called forgive and forget. That doesn't come from any biblical text.
Mm-hmm.
She said it, and she really supported her argument that letting go and moving on was enough forgiveness through texture, scriptures and texts and all sorts of things that really resonated with me. But, I have grown children, four grown children and eight grandchildren, and there's always opportunity to learn of forgiveness or give forgiveness in these relationships.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, and I also have adult children, but to me I keep going back to that definition of forgiveness, which I believe the dictionary thing said, you know, to excuse.
It did.
Yeah, and I refuse to excuse what was done to me, but I am willing to not think about it all the time and not let it fester in me and to not, you know, to not go there and dwell in that area. But to me, I'm not going to give, that there's no excuse for bad behavior that was done. And so I am not going to forgive. But I understand that basically what we're talking about is semantics here.
Right.
Yeah. Can you give a better, you mentioned this conference that you went to with the Reverend Doctor. Could you give another, so in case people want to look her up or What is her name again?
Reverend Marie Fortune. It's F-O-R-T-U-N-E, and she works for Trust Institute, Faith Trust Institute, and they have a website, and they are a national organization that works with all faith beliefs and practices, spiritual beliefs, and they do a lot of work relating to violence and how to help ministers, pastors, and the leaders of the faith to help their congregations manage those types of trauma.
Well, there are a lot of, at least I've heard a lot of arguments about many people who are women who are in a domestic violence situation are actually encouraged to stay there by some of their ministers.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's work it out, stay there. You've married till death do you part. I also want to go back to the forget part.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I think that a lot of people assume that whatever level of forgiveness or at peace that you come with yourself, that comes in this journey, is that there's an assumption that you forget, that incident doesn't go away. I believe through experience, and I often use the example of if you just stop and think for a moment and take a breath, close your eyes, where were you when you heard of the 9/11 incident?
Yep, we never forget that.
It's never forgotten. Now, over time, some of the memories and your immediate response, the crisis response, may have diminished over time, mm-hmm. but you still have that memory. It's a body memory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's something that you emotionally mm-hmm. attach to. It's something that you physically... spiritually, intellectually, your whole body responds to that.
And there can be numerous things that when you're not even thinking about the 9/11 acts of terrorism that were visited upon the U.S., but in your daily life, something will remind me of that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it brings up that memory.
Yes.
And so I don't know that you can ever really forget.
Well, basically what you're describing is PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody goes through a traumatic event and that triggers, that there are sounds or phrases or something that happens down the road mm-hmm. that, boom, immediately triggers a response. I mean, one of the things for me that I have a hard time with is I had a person who kept saying, you have no idea, and there was other derogatory, experiences around that. So right now I can be happy as a clam and going around, and if I hear somebody say, you have no idea, boom, I immediately feel anger. I immediately mm-hmm. feel defensive, and, it just comes right back to me. Those
and it could be in a work setting. It could be in at a party even.
Yeah.
Talking about something silly,
not
even related to any act of violence or demeaning of you,
And you're sitting there thinking you're having a grand time, and then you hear that phrase, and boom, everything changes. Like you were saying, Pinkley, it's a physical response.
It's a physical and emotional and spiritual. But it doesn't mean that you'll ever forget that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that people want to discredit that, and if you have some sort of reaction to a traumatic event in your life, then there's something wrong with you.
Oh, sure. It's been, it's been a year. Haven't you forgotten that yet?
Yes.
Or, your husband died. It's been a year and a half. It's time for you to move on.
Right.
And da-da-da.
Or can you just stop talking about it?
Ah, yes. Yeah.
What do you mean you're still talking about it?
Yes.
But why is it that it's okay or more normalized for, and I'm just using this as an example, because the 9/11 incident, I don't think that there's anyone, except for people that have been born since then,
mm-hmm.
and you were old enough to understand what was going on, that your life in some way did not change or was impacted, or you know of this event.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that's gonna impact you on many, many, many different levels. Certainly the survivors and the victims of that particular incident,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have a totally different response than what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it okay to bring something like that up and go, okay, we can still talk about this and recognize that this happened and that it wasn't okay. But if you're talking about interpersonal violence, why is there a stigma with that says, why haven't you moved on?
Well, do you think, Deborah, the point that Pinkley's making, that, you know, you could talk about the 9/11 issue, for example. I mean, in our parents' generation, it was Pearl Harbor.
Exactly.
You know, there's always been something,
right.
And it is socially
yeah.
acceptable to talk about that and reminisce about that.
Right.
You know? But why can't we do that with something like domestic violence, which we know, occurs in 25% of the population, at least 25%,
yeah.
if not more?
Heather, I agree with you. So I was thinking that it has...
Drop set on my ring.
Oh, darn it. there went the glass. But I just think that the difference is these are national events that you're talking about, and not 2/11 and Pearl Harbor have, it's a unifying
9/11.
Theme.
9/11.
Sorry.
Yeah.
9/11.
2/11 is not what I mean. That's a resource you can call if you need resources.
Right. That is a real number.
It is a real number. And you can tell I've used it a lot.
Yeah.
I handed it out a lot. But so the incidents that you were mentioning, both you, Heather, and Pinkley, were the fact that these are events that draw people together. We're unified in loyalty to our company, our national pride. But interpersonal violence is something that is unique to an individual. And I think I was raised that you don't talk about interpersonal things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really polite conversation. It certainly isn't public conversation.
And yet it's so frequent. I mean, it is definitely part of the mainstream, but nobody acts like it is.
Yes.
And without successful interpersonal relationships, where are we as a culture or society?
Yeah,
right.
I mean, where really?
Some of that also, I mean, can we really escape it? It's the fact that it happens mostly to women. And it does that, despite some of the stuff we read and stuff on the Internet, it is primarily happening to women. Like
absolutely.
98% of it happens
right.
to women.
Right.
It's man-on-woman violence.
Heather, the number one common characteristics of people who have experienced violence is to be female.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think that, you know, I mean, I'll use that old term, sexism, is part of why it's not okay for us to have people who've gone through interpersonal trauma, allow them to talk about it like we do people? I mean, there's still people on TV today that are called in to talk about their 9/11 experiences and the trauma that they experienced there.
Right.
And it's, like 11 years later.
Our Holocaust survivors.
Yes. So those we're happy to acknowledge and we're happy to
and
experience.
We should be. This
we
is
should
not, the
be.
Point
oh, yeah.
is to not
yeah.
I mean I bring that up not to diminish what I mean to or minimize
oh, no.
that experience.
Exactly. We don't want to minimize
right.
anyone's experience.
Anyone. But the example is we're talking about forgiveness and forgetting or letting go
mm-hmm.
of things, and I think that there's a high expectation that people should be able to just move on very quickly from things that have happened in their life.
But then again, with the example that you used of 9/11, nobody's expecting them to move on
right.
and let that go.
Or if there was a major catastrophe in their home, like
yeah.
a natural disaster,
or the house caught fire.
Or the house caught fire. I mean, I use that as that's a great example of the house caught on fire. Literally, that was how I was feeling, is that my house was burning down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I left it and could never, ever, ever return to that house.
Yeah.
Every single memory, every single thing that happened in that home, everything changed.
Yep.
Everything changed.
So when we are not able to talk about it and feel accepted or honored or however you want to put it, about your...
Acknowledged.
Affirmed, validated.
Affirmed, validated.
Yeah.
It tends to... it goes secret. It becomes a secret. And it starts to build shame and regret in ourselves.
Shame, guilt, resentment.
And then we lose our voice. We become voiceless because we feel like nobody wants to hear what I have to
yes.
say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And here this is so significant in my life, but nobody wants to hear me talk about it because it happened a year ago or 3 years ago or 10 years
yeah.
ago.
Yes.
And yet, some of these other tragedies, if the house caught fire or whatever, people would find it acceptable for you to mention it
mm-hmm.
10 years later, 15 years later,
mm-hmm.
And not kind of poo-poo you and say, move on, time to move on.
Here's another point about those things is the workers, the response people,
mm-hmm.
like to 9/11.
First responders.
First responders,
mm-hmm.
the firefighters, the police, the medics, and...
And the trauma that they experience.
The trauma that they experience.
Oh,
they
my
get
God.
Honored and recognized
right.
for that.
Great point. Yeah.
Yeah. They, which they should. They should because yeah. they've done heroic duties. But how many times have you heard of someone who works at a battered women's shelter being praised and recognized in her community
yeah.
for that act alone?
Or for that matter, the woman who actually does leave an abuser. Because we all know that leaving is probably the most dangerous time
yes.
for a woman to get out of it in a domestic violence situation.
Right, that's called separation violence.
Yeah.
And the risk of greater injury goes up 75% once someone leaves an abusive relationship.
So in other words, if a woman is killed, which we hear about every day, it's most likely when she was leaving. And I'm thinking about
yes.
some of the news reports that I've heard. You know, I mean, unfortunately, it's impossible to open a newspaper or turn on the Internet without seeing some headlines about some woman who's been killed in a domestic violence situation.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere buried in the article, it usually says she just filed for divorce or she just moved out or
mm-hmm.
she just told him she wanted to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and I guess the reason I thought of that is, yeah, of course, domestic violence shelter, you know, workers, and they should be honored, but so should the women who get the cojones to move out of a situation like that.
Or I'm going to just put a little spin on that, to safety plan and seek other alternatives to leaving.
Yeah.
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 Good
to
point.
Hold the abuser accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Accountable, accountable, accountable.
Hold
yeah.
accountable.
Yeah. Which is why I don't think I should.
Yeah. And,
talk about full circle here.
And I think our movement has emphasized that if you're in a domestic violence, our movement, our society, our culture right now, if you're in a domestic violence situation or it's not safe for you to be in your home, that it's your automatic response to leave. So therefore, now all the responsibility
mm-hmm.
is on you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
but don't we...
The
responsibility now is on you. Where
yeah.
do you go? What do you do? You've left everything. Why can't we as a community
mm-hmm.
stand up, be our first responders, like that 9/11 event, and say, we are going to gather together, and we are going to support this family, this woman, these children, and say, this is not acceptable, and this
well,
is not
Well, and
okay.
even support the abuser with whatever could
Absolutely.
Make some changes in that person's life. I mean, I think it's a more holistic view.
And accountable is what I mean by that.
Yes.
Accountable doesn't always, in my opinion, mean, okay, now this person's going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because most often, the people that are together want to be together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a woman doesn't want, they want to go by what they know and why they married this person or
mm-hmm.
is with this person.
So are you saying accountability might also be paying child support?
Oh, my
consistently
gosh.
And regularly? Or
absolutely.
Paying the house payment consistently or
just accepting responsibility that you did something wrong.
And if it's that simple, it could
yeah,
be that simple.
Yeah. Just saying, yep, I did something wrong. And yet, you know, you guys know more than I do because I don't work with survivors on a daily basis, but I've never heard of a survivor of domestic violence saying her husband admitted he did something wrong
mm-hmm.
or her boyfriend or her, you know,
significant other.
Yeah.
And if there's not an ability to do that, let's find out how we can support that person to make those steps and those changes. Because accountability, the first part of that is accepting responsibility.
Well, yet then I go back to this whole sexism thing. Why do we do that? Well, I would imagine part of the reason that we don't have a community involvement in a domestic violence situation like you're recommending is because for eons, for centuries, the whole relationship of marriage was, you know, it used to be, let's say that it used to be property.
Oh, yeah.
Know?
Oh, yeah. Based in what they called black letter law from England because
yeah.
when we moved from the European countries to
mm-hmm.
the continent of North America, they all brought their traditions and
yes.
laws with them.
Yeah. So we have that whole history of, you know, women being...
Patriarchy.
Patriarchy, yep, yep. And so that has changed, of course, in the last century to a certain extent, to a large extent. But we still have that in our kind of collective memories, you know, that there was a time when, you know, a husband could do whatever he wanted in his home. But we also have that whole idea of sexism. Are we not doing this because it's happening to women? Would we have more of a collective community response if it were happening to men?
Ooh,
what a good point.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Way to go, Heather.
And
yeah.
would people be going around telling men they needed to get forgive and forget? You know,
or leave.
Leave.
Could you imagine that message if it was turned around?
Yeah.
Why don't you just leave, mister?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, and in fact, especially when you think about the home,
yeah.
I mean, it's still, the home is still usually primarily taken care of by the woman. She's usually the one that takes responsibility for that. She's usually the one who takes responsibility for the children. And even though fathers may be really, really involved, it's still usually, not always, but usually the woman who takes more responsibility.
I think a point that's not included in this little conversation we're having right now is the fact that and I'm an interdisciplinarian, so I like to look at things from multi-views.
Well, you can tell you have a graduate degree.
I always look at things through gender, culture, and history, because that's why we are who we are today.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that when I've been working with some survivors, either through the shelter or through the community office and support groups or on the helpline or the crisis line, is women will say, well, he's threatening to take my children away, and I'm not leaving if that's going to happen.
And I think that happens a lot.
It happens more often than not. But on the other hand, if I said to that particular, say she's a woman, I'd say, what would be wrong with your husband having the children and you moving out? And everyone's like, whoa, that's a whole paradigm shift.
Yeah, but that's like, he's abusing her, and she's supposed to leave her children with him?
Well, there's a whole, that the court system's a whole other thing.
Well,
right?
The courts believe that that's fine.
Because the courts
women
say that domestic violence against you does not indicate domestic violence against children in the home. But we, as people who have learned
as knowledgeable people,
know that my four adult children constantly remind me of things they saw and heard.
Yep.
The impact it has on them now as an adult, raising their own children.
The impact of witnessing.
So the judicial system doesn't recognize that interpersonal violence is also violence on the entire family.
Well, and how can you? Well, the courts is a whole other conversation. Let's go back then to the issue of forgiveness.
Yeah.
So do you recommend your children forgive?
Oh, good question.
Well, they're adults now, so I kind of take a...
That's what I said, recommend. We know what that's like.
My kids will vouch for this. I say, I have to say my piece. This is my opinion. But you will make your own decisions.
Yeah.
So...
The whole issue is so...
But my kids do have a relationship with their father.
Yeah.
And they see him on a regular basis, and so do I.
Yeah.
So that's unique to some people's experience of being in an abusive relationship. But
which just basically carries on your how are you supposed to forgive if your children see him and you know they're seeing him and you run into him at parties and graduations for the kids? And
and I certainly can't forget because there he is. Well, this has just been a really interesting conversation. But
okay, so, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm still sticking with my I'm not going to forgive.
Okay.
I'll let it go.
Yeah.
Because that's harmful to me to not let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to absolve that guy of any responsibility for his actions.
Well, you know what? I support you in that. This is Deborah. I support you in that. And I don't think I'm too far away from your point of view.
Yeah.
I think it is more a matter of semantics, like you say. Yeah. What do you think, Tinkley, about forgiveness?
I think it's complicated, and I think each person needs to do what they need to do for themselves. For me personally, I have forgiven.
Okay. So I'm the only one here that's not forgiving.
It doesn't forgive the act.
I'm kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
All right. I'm kind of in the middle. People can call it what they want.
So basically, we've agreed to disagree.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and somehow we're still friends.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And three divas, three women, three ways.
Exactly. And we just demonstrated we have three ways of seeing things.
And that's the exact point of this show and this conversation is to bring different ideas and perspectives to things that have happened in our lives.
Yeah. I can see trends, though. I mean, we're all interested in domestic violence. We all have a feminist point of view, and we're all pretty strong-willed. So.
Oh, no.
We're not strong-willed or outspoken.
No, we're just little wallflowers. Well, I tell you, we're going to be doing this on a routine basis, aren't we, Deborah? Tinkley?
Yeah, and we all want you to know we're sitting around a kitchen table, and that's the way this work has started.
That's right. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. When we come back again, we don't know what we're going to talk about yet, but it'll be good, whatever it is.
So you'll hear from three women?
Three ways.
Three divas.
Yay!
And then
we're out.
There must be a delay here.
Yeah, the music bed didn't come up.
I have to turn it on over here.
Oh, okay. When we get close to the end, go ahead and turn it on.
Okay, next time I'll remember.